My name is Thomas Mick, and I am not a woman. And so I am your host today on Two Moms and a Burrow. And at the present time, I appear to be one dad on a burrow. So without any further ado, I will bring in our first guest, whose name is Bob Bernard. So, Bob, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine. So you're hot on the show. Ah, there we go.
Am I in?
Hi, Carol.
Hi, everyone. I apologize. I am having two sets of computers. I have two computers, and they're both down. I might have made a few turnkeys mad or something since I was researching their fraud last night. Both of my computers are down, so I apologize for being late.
Well, that's quite all.
Hello, Carol.
All right.
Hi. We got, is it Terry, Bob, and Richard? And Tom, is that correct? I don't have the computers up. I had my notes on the computer.
Right now, Bob is online and you. And I'm not
sure
the phone numbers for the other guests.
And Thomas.
So there's other guests.
Yeah, I don't know how
this
to get
Bob
to.
This is Bob Bernard, not Bob Burnett.
Okay.
Bob Bernard. Did I say
okay.
Burnett?
It's okay. They're very similar. Bob, do you mind?
Burnett, Bernard, yep.
I just can't believe that I did.
But it's close.
No. Anyway.
You're doing very well, Thomas. It'll be okay. That's how it is on the internet world.
This should be interesting.
Okay. So, I really need to figure out who the other guests are. So, Carol, you're going to have to kind of help me on that because I don't really know the list.
I know that Terry is one of them, and I believe Richard. I'm just going by my memory because Renee talked to the guests and she knows them. But I'm going to try to get onto my computer to take a look at the.
Okay. I can pull Terry in.
On the website,
I'm
seeing Bob Burnett and Terry Russell.
Uh-huh. And then there is someone, I believe, the president of the one of the –
Yes.
Richard, I believe,
in the
is
queue
his name.
He's in the queue, and I'm about to pull him in on. So,
okay.
Now, do you want me to pull or push? I really haven't done this in a while.
When you get in that studio, there's a button where you can unmute folks. Do you see that?
I know,
are you in the studio?
Okay. Joke, Carol.
Oh, okay.
Push,
yeah, you do both.
Push.
That'll be fine by me, Thomas. I'll be right here if you need me, and I'll just chime in every once in a while like I do, Renee. That's okay?
Okay. Just a moment. Hello, is this Terry?
This is Bob Barnett.
This is Bob Barnett. Oh. Well, hello, Bob.
B-A-R-N-E-T.
B-U-R-N-E-T, not Bernard. Burnett.
No, not Bernard.
Okay.
B-A-R-N-E-T.
Yeah.
Bob.
I'm sorry. You guys just don't get my humor.
Hey, Bob.
Yes.
We had technical difficulties. I had technical difficulties this morning, so I have two computers that neither one of them are letting me get online. It just keeps spinning, so apologies.
Well, I did talk to Renee about 30 minutes ago.
Uh-huh.
We're ready to go, but we've scheduled it a specific way. Are
okay.
We live on all this?
Yes.
Oh, that's convenient.
Yes, we are at the moment.
Well, we always do the best once the battle starts to get everything in order, don't we? So, Terry will be joining us at approximately the start of the second hour.
Okay.
He's in a motor coach. Running around getting juries together, and our interim president Geiger will join us at approximately 5 minutes before the second hour. for a short period, and I'm going to carry the ball and be with you the whole time. So we hope we can get something across to your audience that's of value to them.
And I'm sure you will. And do you know Thomas Mick?
I know of him. I follow him. I've seen his plan.
He's famous, I tell you. So I'm Carol. I'm the other
mother. Montana guy, right? Is that Montana you're in?
I'm the... I was up in Columbia Falls, up north of Kalispell.
Kalispell, okay. Well, I'm in Colorado, and Terry's in Florida, and Jim is in Alabama. So we got some geography covered here. I'm here to tell people
about the Philippines.
The recovery, rehabilitation of the Republic. The republic that belongs to everybody. And the reason that that we've done it that way is to present the organized playing field that was original in our organic constitution and the original republic. What we've done is reseated the vacant seats. When I say vacant seats, I have to stop and explain a minute. In late 1860, the beginning of the end of our republic took place. That's when seats were vacated in the South, and eventually through the decade of the 60s, 1860s, the Civil War and the aftermath of the Civil War is where we lost our republic, and it went on for about 60 more years, and finally ended in the early 1900s. And in 1938, we lost our law form. We lost our law form in 1938 because law and equity and constitutional standing disappeared in the wake of what is uniform commercial operation in law. Now, that's what we deal with today. And that's the part that Terry's working on. And in the second hour, he'll be here to tell us about that. And his apologies I'll give right now. He's in a motor coach making a run around the Southeast, working with a lot of different individual counties on what he's doing. I'll introduce briefly what he's doing so that everyone will be ready for it. What he's doing is he is working with 67 counties in Florida and now others throughout the South to help in what is not a matter of governance. The government has nothing to do with the operation of grand juries. If it does, it voids them automatically because that's supposed to be the people speaking, the people looking for remedy. That's what he'll be speaking about. What I'm speaking about is the broader base that we've provided by re-inhabiting those seats that were vacated when in 1871, they completed with what's called the Dictionary Act, the corporation, and the operation of the corporation.
Is that also referred to as the Dick Act?
No, it's called the Dictionary Act.
Okay.
This Dictionary Act was passed 4 days after the Act of 1871, which was the second time that D.C. was incorporated. Incorporated originally in 1801 for the purpose of operation of the district. But in 1871, an entirely different purpose took place. It's all part of the whole, and it's not that single thing that did it. So I want to go back now and talk about the 1860s, because that's when the Civil War took place. The Civil War took place, and early in the Civil War, there was a tax act in 1862. The tax act identified the people and levied tax. The problem is when the war ended, the levy didn't stop. Now then we're going to go forward to 1868. And in 1868, the Tax Act was used as a base to create what we know as the 14th Amendment. And in the 14th Amendment, that captures the citizenry within the corporation. Then in 1871, they reincorporate over the original one the operation of the District of Columbia. Now, this is 10 pages long in the original documents, and it's a really hard read, and it's a boring read.
Well, you make it less boring. So you're saying that the Tax Act was used as, in 1868, the Tax Act was used as a basis to bring in some kind of reform, correct? Is that right?
The 14th Amendment is what happened.
Okay, the 14th Amendment. So I'm just taking notes.
Yes.
And then, so whenever they came back in 1871, was that just building up just like yet another entity that we thought was, so they brought in yet another corporation, basically, a rogue government?
Yes, they just overlaid a second corporation on the first geography, but this one was different. There are open ends in this one. There are definitions in this one. There is history that's involved in this one, and the primary history are the Tax Act and the 14th Amendment, because that identified all of the citizenry.
It captured it, you said?
That was their capture of the citizenry of the now, under Reconstruction, United States, because the first Reconstruction Act takes place in the mid-60s, right when all this is going on. The first Reconstruction Act literally nullifies the Congress and militarizes the executive. And that's what we still live with today.
So
once
the great
that was
industrial
done,
complex, I mean the military complex, right?
Well, the military rule of the several states who no longer had a voice, there were five districts at that time. So what actually happened is all these things come together, and when you finally have this Dictionary Act, with almost everyone leaves out the Dictionary Act, but it's the icing on the cake. The Dictionary Act passed 4 days after the Act of 1871, and what it does is defines all and everything as corporations, including flesh and blood people. That's the icing on the cake. That's how they get it done.
Wow.
And ultimately, the states lose their very sovereignty in this process, finally in 1913, when we took the one thing away from them they still had left. Because that's when the 17th Amendment passed and said senators would be voted directly into office by the people. You completely took the states out of the picture. Has a huge effect on Article 4, Section 4, because Article 4, Section 4 is a requirement for the executive to maintain a Republican form within the states. So all these things are combined. It's not just one single thing that happens one single time. This all occurs in a six-decade period to finally end up where we are. And what runs parallel with this is the law form is being changed, because attorneys become more and more and more a special class. Politicians become more and more and more a special class. And then, on top of all that, the people, by their direct vote for both houses, virtually destroy the standing of their states. So these things all look good. Well, the people get more voice, but they're all very bad because they take us down the road from Republican form to a Democratic form. It puts us exactly where Cicero talks about Rome at the 500-year mark. Exactly the same place. The loss of the Republic is the beginning of a transference from a freehold society that we started out as, and makes it a give me, I, me, me, what do I get, democratic society, which always leads to, we all know, more and more dictatorial, more and more regimen, more and more regulation.
More enslavement, because they've enslaved, they have basically oppressed everyone so much. And we've let them. We have let them. We do. Have you heard of jury nullifications?
Sure.
So when you're talking about the fact that these grand juries aren't being ran by we the people, if you will, and I may be saying that wrong. I apologize if I am. So I've been into federal court before, and I've seen juries. And the judge appoints them, and the lawyers get to pick them out. Three strikes, and they're out. They get three people to pull out.
So well, that's a pettit jury. We're talking about grand juries in this particular instance. Your
well,
pettit
I think
jury
that they,
is what you're talking about.
Okay.
That's
hello.
Go ahead, Thomas.
You guys hear me?
I'll mute out.
You guys, I kept getting kicked out of Skype, so I kept getting disconnected. I hope I'm back for a while now, but I do have a couple of questions for you, Bob, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
And probably my most primary concern is any of the actions that you've just described that has been done by the bankers and the corporations, and Congress, incidentally, has any of it been consistent with the spirit as well as the letter of the organic Constitution? It has it been permitted by the Constitution itself?
Absolutely not. That's our whole purpose in reseating those vacant seats. We have to get back. You can't fix a systemic problem that's calculated, purposeful, and absolute in its authority. You have to remove it and replace it.
Well, on that we're in total agreement, and I thank you for that answer. What my difficulty is today is that so much of this that has been put in place, and actually I have looked at not just the Act of 1871 and the fallout hence from there, but actually the Civil War itself and the executive actions of Lincoln and the corporate, let's just say the grip on the Republic by the corporations during the Civil War. And immediately following it, by imposing the 14th, 15th amendments prior to the adoption or the incorporation of 1871.
Well, actually, and even so, earlier, it's that 1862 Tax Act that starts it.
Correct. Yeah. Well, basically, what I'm getting at, because. Have you read my plan of action?
I have.
Because I call for it. I don't know if you've heard. I've revised it recently and included some language from an article I wrote called The Declaration of Restoration, which calls for returning the Constitution back to January 1, 1860,
exactly.
To the state. The
Constitution
exactly
has where we
are. State. Right. So... And I chose 1860 because I deliberately wanted people to have the Civil War in their mind. Because the Constitution, as you probably know, the Constitution remained static from 1819 until the usurpation of 1865. So in 1860, it was the same Constitution that existed after the ratification of the 13th Amendment.
You're absolutely correct. In Utah in 2010, when we met in a full assembly and reseated these seats in a full and complete way by declaration, we reseated them circa 1867 with the Organic Constitution, and through 1860 when South Carolina, the first walkout occurs in late 1860. So we are in absolute agreement on that, and we've already reseated them so people can simply flow in, and that's our purpose, that's our act, and that's why we're here.
Well, see, that was exactly, if you notice in my plan, which we're attempting to implement, and Bob Burnett, who was actually the coordinator for what we're doing, is also on this on the show right now. He's kind of been,
that's Bernard, not that's he's Bernard?
Yeah. Bob Bernard.
Okay.
Yes. Bob
okay.
Bernard. Okay. Just to keep those straight. But
I'm Bernard. We're waiting for Burnett. Burnett.
I'm the handsome brute.
When we were going through my plan and through our actions, we were actually thinking about you guys because the Republic for the United States had already filled these seats in absentia, sort of. And as the plan of action that I proposed moved on and we started removing oath breakers, well, obviously you need to replace them with somebody. And so I was kind of hoping to be able to get together with you guys and actually discuss the viability of dovetailing our two actions so that it fulfills the restoration of the Republic.
Well, actually, that's exactly our goal. And actually, you guys were on my call list for after the call today because I'm preparing some other stuff in that regard. Because I'm charged, I'm without office. I don't serve as an officer or member in Congress. I'm without office because my charge is to work with groups, organizations, and like-minded of any organization to accomplish this, because we've got the playing field and it needs to get filled up. And we don't have any ego. We have no dues. We have no membership. We have no, because everyone out there, this is your republic. The seats were void. They were left there. When the Constitution changed and the corporation took effect, they left them void. We took them back. They're for everyone out there. So Bob Bernard, I say to you, yeah, we will definitely talk. And to Thomas Mick, I'll say to you, your plan is uniquely parallel in almost every way. And actually, you would be surprised how many other organizations, groups, and we accept nobody. And the reason we accept nobody, EXCEPT, we make no exception about anybody because the Constitution doesn't. This is not a club you qualify for. This is not a place where you register and pay dues. This is not a place, and I mentioned, freehold is how this all started out. Only landowners that had skin in the game were originally allowed to vote in the Organic Constitution. Now we have freeloaders replacing freeholders. And that's a huge problem. They're saying something in the high 40th percentiles, 46 or 7% they talk about, or some kind of government responsibility, funding, et cetera. And the first question we always get, well, what about my Social Security? Or from other people, how about my benefits? The bottom line, we only deal right now in the recovery, and it's going to be for the finally seated, properly elected people who fill these seats to determine all that.
Well, see, I'm missing most of what you're saying because I keep getting kicked off Skype. The dilemma of being on the road.
That's where Terry is, I understand.
Thomas, do you want to call? Yes. Just call in now, and I'm in there. I think I can stay in the studio, and I can just unmute you, and you can go from there, and then you won't have to, or will you still get kicked off of Skype even if you do that?
Well, if I call on the... Well, actually, the signal on the phone, let me see if it's worth a darn. Yeah, the phone's actually probably a better option. Because
I will,
in
Facebook, give you the number. I got the my husband's computer. I have it up and running now, and it usually does better than my laptop, and I'll message you in Facebook.
Bing.
and then you can call in, and I will take the keyboard, if that's okay, and I'll just mute out and let you gentlemen continue. Is that all right?
While you're getting organized, I'll just go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll go right ahead.
What I want to point out to continue on the Republic for the United States, because the misunderstanding is oftentimes what it's about. This is not where you go to redeem a credit card problem or solve your mortgage, because those aren't the acts that are conducted in a republic in its organic. All that stuff is commercial law. All that commercial law is what we have to replace. So there are people eating away at all those things all over the country right now. There are people addressing those things all over the country right now. And that's not what we're here for. We're here to provide a return of everybody to their lawful place in their state, their county, their hometown, with extremely limited governance at the general level of government, the United States, the union of those states. The union of those states for very limited stipulated matters of business and conduct. We have gone so far the other way that this is in crisis mode. It's in crisis mode because if anyone hasn't, I'm going to throw in something else here. If you haven't made yourself aware of Agenda 21, that is what you need to absolutely be aware of, because Agenda 21 is the United Nations dictate that our corporate leaders have signed on to, that's present now in every single county, in every single state in the United States, and you see it every day. These agendas are the essentially socialist, communist-driven theories that they're going to have to take everything from us to make all the rest equal. When I say us, I mean on this land, on this continent, in these United States. I have a couple ponds in my backyard. Agenda 21 says I have too much. If I have those ponds, I have water that doesn't belong to me. My wife has a garden. She raises tomatoes and some other stuff. They say that's too much. Those should be gardens for everybody. Even, let's talk about any of you that are homeowners. If you own a home over the last 20 or even 30 years, you've watched an interesting transformation that's been done by attorneys at every level, and that is the rewrite and reconstruction of homeowners associations, cranking it down tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter. Last year in my very own, they decided 3x5 flags were too big, and they decided they were going to be smaller. Who are they? They starts at the United Nations. In 1984, a couple of socialists and a businessman got together and wrote a document. That led to another document. which now leads to, if you go down to your county, you will find a book 3 inches thick full of regulations. That's the United Nations Agenda 21 police dictate. They come around and write their little certificates, and they fine you because you got rules you didn't know about that have been replacing your original local community and homeowner restrictions, more and more and more, all regulation, 30 deep with bureaucrats that no one elected ever.
In other words, you're usurping the right of property.
Your right of property doesn't any longer exist.
Well,
colonial title actually, is no longer available to you.
Well, maybe technically it doesn't. But see, since our natural rights are God-given, they exist despite the efforts of globalists to erase them, so to speak, or to make them of no effect. So I hold that they still exist. They're just not being used. They're not being exercised. And we are not opposing the actions taken to prevent us from exercising those rights.
Well, you're correct, except there's one huge flaw. And this is the flaw you have, I have, and everyone that wants to return to what it should be has. It's called the exercise. It has to be exercised, and you can't exercise
yes.
it unless you can enforce it. Can't
Which
enforce
is why...
it in today's world without causing harm or being harmed.
Well, liberty requires sacrifice. If we don't do what is necessary to regain our freedom and our liberty, we will lose it. And our founders gained our liberty from Great Britain, first by pleading with the crown, and then when that didn't work, by force of arms. Americans need to arm themselves. And that's the first thing in my plan of action, is arming the people.
We're retaining the ones we've got.
Right. Yeah, I'm not talking about at the very first, I'm not saying the militia or anything of that nature. Although, as you probably are aware, the people are the militia. All I'm saying is, people, take your guns out of the gun safes and put them on your hips. Start being ready to defend yourself. And the more people that do that, the stronger they become. And the stronger they become, the more the sheriffs that are unconstitutional sheriffs are going to take notice. I'm not saying it's going to be a peaceful transition, because you're going to get pushback. Whenever you exercise your rights in the face of tyranny, you're going to get pushback. And as long as you concede, you lose.
Let me make a statement to that. Because the truth is, very few people in terms of percentage of the population really understand militia. And militia is this simple. In the original intent, and still surviving today, the ultimate militia is the free militia, responsibility of each citizen, 17 to 45. It's in writing. It always has been. And there are changes throughout the years, and changes aside, the intent never changed. that's the citizen who falls out in the street armed to take care of business in an ultimate problem. And they used to grab a musket and go out there, and now we have different things, but it's all the same intent. The intent is down to every individual citizen, you have skin in the game. And I don't mean 14th Amendment citizen. I mean originally seen organic intent. Now, what we have now is we have our active military. We have the National Guards of the several states, but those are federalized. So now we have what the Act actually designates several categories, but what the Act actually designates in the final classes of the militia is the unorganized militia, which consists of members of militia who are not members of the National Convention. That's you and me and everyone that, well, not me, I'm an old man now. Technically I can't, but I'll just fall out there anyway, I look young. Here's the deal. Citizen responsibility. There is no 911. You are 911. It's a responsibility of being.
Well, it's the civic responsibility of all free men to provide for the defense of the community against all threats. And those threats can be criminal threats. They can be threats from invasion from without or tyranny from within.
That's
so the
right.
The militia is the collective right, or I should say the collective action of self-defense of the citizens or of the people. I would prefer the term people, quite frankly, because citizen gets used.
Well, you know, in its original intent, it wasn't used wrong. And in the Constitution, it wasn't used wrong. Unfortunately,
no.
they also took people, I hate to tell you, but in the Dictionary Act, they took people in every derivative you can even think of and assigned it to corporation.
Again.
Literally, if we assume we can be nothing that we were, they took all those names. That's the problem.
But again, they did so unlawfully.
Absolutely.
So Congress...
They did it behind our back, sneak thief style.
Also, was there a quorum? Was there a quorum in Congress at the time of...
No, and the act was done by a literally neutered Congress, because the first Reconstruction Act militarized the executive, and that was it. Congress has been literally neutered since then.
But in 1862, after the refusal of Lincoln to accept the secession of the states, that created a problem in Congress, because now Congress could not reorganize with just the northern states.
That's
they
right.
had to include in that number the southern states, which Lincoln refused to let go. Consequently, Congress could not form a quorum to do business. So nothing Congress did at that time had any validity of law.
Well, actually, they could have. One Stat 50, which is the statute that addressed how the executive could guarantee under Article 4, Section 4, a Republican form of government in the states is exactly what Lincoln intended to act upon, but instead what happened in the process through the 60s, instead of acting correctly by that and guaranteeing a Republican form in those southern states, it went to a military government. And so your civil government was lost and the civil authority with it. One statute 50, all those statutes are on our website at republicfortheunitedstates.org, and we got all those statutes there. That's the original documents, and you can read it for yourself. We want everyone to read it for themselves that wants to. Most people are too lazy, and they won't do it. But the reality is this. Had the action been to appoint civil authority in those states instead of the Reconstruction Act, which took it all into military authority, we might not have lost it, but we did. It's lost. It's been lost. And it can be recovered when we get enough people filling this republic. We can have it back. Now, I've had these discussions with general officers and they know all this. The bottom line, we had General Valley come on one of our Republic News networks, and flat out, the ultimate answer is that they won't take us because they can't if we, the armed citizen, stand. That's on our, the replay's on our Republic site. It was August 7th, I believe, that General Valley was on. You can hear it from his own words. And he's adamant about it. So are those other officers he works with. And the military knows. The retired military knows. And they're some of the most active people to try and get something moved. The problem is, I don't know how to move this back to anything like original in the systemic form that we are in right now.
Well, that's what my plan of action is about.
Well, yours is essentially ours.
Which is, my plan calls for the people to arm themselves, to organize into militia, to get behind the constitutional sheriffs, and then to remove all sworn officers in all branches of government, local and state and federal, that have violated their oaths of office. And I would like to also add that they have violated the purpose of the government, and they have acted without our consent, i.e. attacking our rights instead of securing our rights, and doing things that we have not consented to in the Constitution. So that would feed into replacing those officers. And then I didn't really want to have a meeting with you guys on air. I wanted to discuss stuff.
No,
with
we
you
can
all
talk about that later. Matter of fact, I might talk to you before tomorrow night. My Republic News Network is dealing with militias.
I think Terry was on here, and then now he's off.
He's due to come on. He's coming from a 904 code.
Yeah, there he is right now.
And
he's on right now.
President Geiger is coming from a 334 code. I should have told you that.
Oh, and he's on there as well.
And we're about to transition to President Geiger because he's doing a limited appearance here. And And then following that, we're going to move into Terry's subject. And I'm just kind of helping it run along as we go here.
Okay, so I can bring in
Terry's
President Geiger.
Terry's totally different. We want to bring President Geiger on now.
Okay, just a second. Hello, President Geiger. Are you there?
I think I'm here.
Well, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be on the show. I've been listening in. You guys have it absolutely right. You know, the result of the Civil War and when you couple that with the assassination of President Lincoln, the result was that the Union was preserved, but the Republic was not. In other words, the actions that President Lincoln took, you know, they functioned to preserve the Union, and he did that, but they assassinated him before he could restore the Republic. So the Republic was vacated and a corporation was created in its stead. And our first president, George Washington, in his farewell address in 1796, he warned us that that very thing would happen. He said that cunning, ambitious, and unprincipled men will be unable to subvert the power of the people, which is what you guys have been talking about, the people, and to usurp for themselves the reins of government, destroying afterwards the very engines which have lifted them to unjust dominion. In other words, George Washington saw the day that the very things that you've been talking about on this show would happen, and he warned us. It's almost prophetic. So, you know, I would say to your listeners, if you think you can change things in Washington and make them better, I think you better have another thought coming, because that corporation, the U.S. corporate U.S., it's not yours. It belongs to somebody else. It's a corporate government. It's been put in place to manage you and your assets, not to represent you. And on top of all that, it's been taken over. Not only is the corporation, but the corporation has been taken over by foreign entities. Those foreign entities, I can assure you, don't have your best interests in hand and haven't for quite some while now. So the bottom line is the American people, we're trying to present them with their choices. They can let things continue to spiral as they have been, spiraling out of control and getting worse and worse, or they can push the reset button and come and get and re-inhabit their republic. You know, what Bob alluded to in 2010, November 2010, the people actually re-inhabited their republic, but not in mass. So the republic is being re-inhabited. The invitation is going out to the American people to come and re-inhabit their republic in mass. That's the only thing, you know, when Bob Barnett is talking about General Vallee and other people in retired military, they're waiting on the people before they can act. I can assure you, if we had millions of people on the Republic website, millions of people joining and said, yeah, I'll support what you guys are doing, attending conference calls, attending radio blogs, and clamoring that their republic be restored in this country, don't you think the military would act in a heartbeat? It's not a hard thing to do. It's just the people have to have hope. And I can tell you today that the only hope for the American people, and their, I would call it a hub of hope, the republic. It's their republic. The invitations are going out and continue to go out to them to join their republic and support it. And that's my main job as the president, is to grow this thing and to educate the American people. You know, I've charged Bob Barnett. That's his thing, to reach out to as many different people groups as possible to let them know what's been done on their behalf, and it's theirs. The republic belongs to the people. It always has. It's not ever going to change, and the people have the responsibility and the obligation, if you will, to step up to the plate. It's kind of like the ball is in their in their court now. What are they going to do with the ball? It's in their court. So that being said, I yield.
Saying a mouthful. I've been actually working towards restoring the Republic for decades, more behind the scenes, but a lot more up front now, because as you probably realize, 20 years ago, nobody wanted to hear the truth. I mean, or well, not, I should say, I shouldn't say nobody, but few people really wanted to hear the truth. They just didn't want to know the truth. They weren't ready to hear it. But today, with the advent of Barack Obama and his blatant, and the globalists' blatant attacks on the sovereignty of the Republic, people are waking up in record numbers. And so now is the opportune time for us to make the movements necessary to restore the Republic or lose it forever. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And it's not a hard thing to do. It's a question of it's going to be as simple as this. People going to the Republic website, clicking on there and say, yeah, I'll support what you're doing. Doesn't mean I'm going to give monetarily. It means you're going to support us and that you're going to get involved in your Republic. If people do that in mass, to do the things that you're talking about in your plan, Thomas, I agree with what needs to be done, but I'm telling you, it's going to take the military doing it on a large scale in order for those things to happen, because those people are, in essence, are mafia. Now, you know, I've said before, and I'll say it again on this show, we can't blame the current office holders, not entirely, you know, that are holding the offices right now, because they inherited the same system that we did. You know, we're the ones maybe suffering more from it than they are, but I can assure you that their children, their grandchildren are going to suffer from this just like all the rest of Americans are. So you would think that they would have a vested interest in helping us restore their republic too. So one of our policies that we've stated is that we offer peace and we offer forgiveness. Now, we can't protect them from a grand jury that might learn something that they did to harm somebody. But we, as an interim government, and by the way, we don't say that we're a permanent government because there's a lot of things we're lacking. But we are interim, and, you know, that has its implications. But we're, in other words, our hands are tied. Our main job right now that we can do is reach out to the American people, you know, and tell them it's your republic. It's been reset. It's ready for you to inhabit it in mass. It's an easy job to do. Come join us. And once you join us in mass, things will change. It's no doubt in my mind.
And if I might add, in mass means entire groups are on the same exact path. Entire churches, entire organizations, entire militias are on this path. And we can integrate together on this one goal. And it's the necessary thing. I will absolutely tell you, there are a large number of people that believe that this will not end without another civil war. I will tell you, I firmly believe it can end without another civil war. We are lawful. We are peaceful. We hold to our rights to keep and bear arms, to do our duty as militia. We hold to those. All rights are organic to what we've re-inhabited. What we do know is this. That I came from military. I was in the 60s. I was in the military. I was an infantry officer in the 60s in the Army. I will tell you this. These people know their oath, but every day that goes by, that is being eroded. They are literally making it an absolute requirement and on promotion boards for enlisted and reviews for officers, both making it absolute that their duty be to the corporate officers and not the Constitution. They literally ask questions like, will you fire on Americans? Now, the reason the retired military is so valuable is they understand. And in the last 2 years, many of them have been purged from positions where they attempted to do their duty. Others have just quit prior to the standard retirement because they just didn't want to exercise some of the things that are required.
See, this is one area that I have difficulty with the military. I've written on it. I'm sure at least some of you gentlemen have read some of my writings on the subject. But my biggest problem with the active military today is that a man is sitting in the Oval Office acting as if he's the commander-in-chief who hasn't even satisfied the eligibility requirements to be the commander-in-chief. And yet, our general staff, as well as our officer corps, are all obeying his deployment orders and, by extension, the orders of the Joint Chiefs, which are underneath the President's office. And they are enacting the will of the globalist masters of Barack Obama and the others, despite his ineligibility. I still see congressmen that stand in Congress and openly call him Mr. President when he has failed multiple times to produce the evidence that he is qualified to be the president. And see, to me, that goes.
Everything you're saying is true. Everything you're saying is true because the leftovers are the Joint Chiefs. The ones that should be sitting there were purged.
Yes, but how can a usurper of the office of president have the power to purge anything? This is my point.
Because he's allowed by Congress.
Well, yeah, but see, they're committing treason.
That's all true, but that's not the solution. That's identification of what they are.
Well, the solution, as I see it, is removing them.
That's right. And that's why we need to get to Terry.
So
that's the real reason Terry's coming on here.
Okay, good. If I can, I'd like to
introduce him. Would that be appropriate?
I'll bring him in right now if you'd like.
He's a 904.
Yes, I see that.
And Mr. President, I didn't mean to knock you off. You are done, right?
Well, I would say one more thing.
Please.
And you talked about it a little bit, Bob, about involving other groups. And a lot of different groups are out there working towards what they think might fix the problem. You know, we've identified what the problem is here today. But the fact of the matter is you can't make a leopard change its spots. In other words, the corporation was designed to make money off the backs of the American people, and it's doing exactly what it's designed to do. So it can't be, quote-unquote, fixed from working from within. And I think a lot of people are out there trying to fix things using that system, and it's not going to work. The other thing people are maybe clamoring for is a constitutional convention. Well, so what if you change the constitution of the corporation? What have you done? It's just going to be ran by the same party bosses that are running Congress right now, the same people back behind the scenes that are running things, and you're going to end up worse after a constitutional convention for the corporation than you would before. So I would just emphasize one more time, the Republic is the hope, the hub of hope for the American people. They need to latch on and get involved.
Thank you. Is Terry on now?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness gracious. We finally got you, Terry.
Hey, Bob. How are you doing?
Terry is here to tell us about the most direct way that the people, now this is not a Republic matter. This is a responsibility for someone who is within the Republic. But this is not a matter of government. This is not a matter of directed action from any level of government. And I mean state, county, general, none. This is a requirement of the people. And it's why Terry is on here today. He's in a motor coach traveling around. Have we got a good chance of you not getting interrupted with your reception, Terry?
I'm sitting at one spot right now. I just returned home to Cross City, Florida, and I'm sitting outside of a restaurant. My wife is inside. She came down to meet me, and they went to the courthouse to pick up papers that I've been forbidden to go anywhere near or on the grounds of the courthouse. I can't even participate in my own defense. They've blocked me from access from information. My wife, through her diligent efforts and from some of the investigators from the People's Grand Jury, finally got something. I don't know what those documents are yet. I'm kind of anxious to see what they got, but I'll find out in a few minutes. This is the most important thing right now. I want to get the word out as to what's going on, how my rights have been usurped and abused, and let everybody understand that this is not just me somewhere in Florida. This is everyone in the country that's being subjugated, that's being tyrannized, and by a government, and the one you were just talking about. What's going on there? Nothing is being done by the Constitution. Nothing is being done according to law. These people do not even obey their own statutes, and this is evident from the things that have happened to me in this particular case. And if it is now the appropriate time to kind of give everybody an idea of what's occurred here?
Yes, let me just quickly introduce how you ended up a bandit here. Terry's been branded because he was appointed to serve on a jury by the de facto engines of law in Florida. He accepted that charge and ended up jury foreman. He then attempted to do his duty, book and page, as a jury foreman, and for that part, go ahead, Terry. Thank you.
Okay, I'll take you back just a little bit on this, if I may. When several months ago, back earlier in the year, I had been introduced to something called the Common Law Grand Jury. I listened to the people as I listened to anybody who might have a solution to the problems that we're facing today and do anything at all to help start turning the tide back the other direction. I listened to what they had to say, and then I attended a meeting in Lake City about an hour from my home, and it was led by our state attorney, Jeff Siegmeister, and Jeff Siegmeister was there to defend the statutory grand jury system that this state already has, and his position was this: look, these people that are running around crying about the common law grand jury, it's just a waste of time, and they're just using it as a way to make a lot of money. Well, in all my exposure to the common law jury movement, common law grand jury movement, I had never had anybody ask me for money. In fact, they kept giving me books and information. I never thought about how they were being supported. They never asked me for anything, and so I never gave them anything. I didn't quite understand how they were making money off of this. But Siegmeister went through and he said, you know, the grand jury by the statutes is, it's open to the public, or anybody can bring anything they want to the public, and we'll consider their position, and we'll make determinations. And if it's determined by the grand jury that the law has been broken, it's my duty to receive that information and prosecute, investigate, and prosecute accordingly. And I thought, well, that sounds real good. And I kind of dismissed the whole idea of the common law grand jury. Now, give you a little bit more background on this. Jeff Siegmeister ran for election in 2012. He came to my Tea Party group, and he made campaign speeches on four different occasions, and everybody liked him, and everything he said was, by the Constitution, I'm going to bring us back to constitutional government. We're going to run my office, the state attorney's office, by the Constitution and by law. And we bought it. Just as we keep buying the same spiel from every other politician that comes down the pike, we keep voting and we keep electing them and we keep saying, maybe this is the magic bullet, the one guy that's going to make the difference. Well, I learned. When I became a member of the grand jury and volunteered to be the foreman, I took my oath and I took it very, very seriously. I listened very closely to the instructions of the judge. I learned very carefully to what the state attorney, it wasn't Jeff, it was one of his minions, said to us, and he charged us with this. Now, this is not a big deal, this grand jury thing, so don't worry about it. You'll probably never hear from us again. In 6 months you'll be off and it'll be done. Only if somebody murders somebody will we bring you in. That's if we don't get a confession out of them ahead of time. So that was the way we were left. Just go home and forget about this. Everything we've told you up to now is really not important. I went home. But I couldn't get that oath out of my mind. I take oaths very seriously. I took one before I went to Vietnam. I've taken the oath several times since. And my oath has always been to the Constitution, and I've always taken the Constitution as being a very serious subject. And when I took the oath for the grand jury and I listened to the instructions, I said, okay, fine. This is an opportunity for me to find out if the grand jury is real, as Jeff Siegmeister had presented to us. My time to find out if the people can actually access this and get justice through the people's, or through the grand jury system by the state. And one of the ways I thought about it was, okay, fine, can the people actually reach into the grand jury? Can they get the grand jury's attention? And we were told that it was our job to go out into the community, not tell anybody who we were, because that's a secret. And if we find instances of illegality or criminality, that it's our duty to bring it before the grand jury for their consideration. But I wanted to find out if some member of the public had a concern with something going on in the county, that they could reach into me or anyone else in the grand jury and present those concerns. It was suggested at a meeting what would happen if I wrote a letter to myself as the grand jury foreman, would I get it? And I thought, well, that's easy enough to find out, and I did. And I wrote a letter, and I addressed it to the eyes only of the foreman of the grand jury. I sent it through the clerk of court, and I waited for the letter to come to me. And it didn't come. And a month later, it didn't come. I sent it, by the way, registered return receipt requested. So I got the card back within a couple of days. I know that the clerk of court received that letter. I have the signature of the woman in her office who received it. And I said, okay, they've got it. I'll wait for a call. And I know the clerk of court, and I know she knows me, and I'm in the courthouse all the time, and I never got a call. And all the times I was in the courthouse and I said hi to her, she never mentioned that letter. And I thought, well, okay, now I know that a member of the public cannot get in touch with a member of the grand jury if they have a concern. That was proof to me. And I said, now I'm starting to get concerned about how Jeff Siegmeister presented this. Another requirement of the grand jury is that any member of the grand jury who's aware of criminality in another county, a neighboring county, or any other county in the state, is required, duty-bound, by their oath, to reach out to the grand jury in that other county to make them aware of that criminality. I went to two different counties, Gilchrist and Levy County. I went to their county clerks, and I said, I am the chairman or the foreman of the grand jury in Dixie County. I have information that there are felonies being committed in your county, and I need to talk to the foreman of your grand jury. Now, don't tell me who they are because their identity is secret, but I can reveal my identity. My name is Terry, and here's my phone number. Please have your foreman contact me so I can advise them of these criminal acts that are taking place. Now, I'm talking to the clerk of court. This is a public officer. This is a public officer that's sworn to uphold the same constitution I am. They are also sworn to protect the public. And I have just told him that I know of felonies that are occurring in his county. The first act that he made was to go to the county attorney. The county attorney said, oh, no, you got to take this to the state attorney. He took it to the state attorney. The state attorney said, no, you do not put this man in contact with your grand jury. I was denied access, and even when I persisted, they still denied access. I never got to talk to anybody with another grand jury, so that's lie number two that Mr. Siegmeister was caught in. That left me with a feeling that, this isn't working very well. So the next step, I said, all right, fine. I am a member of the jury. I know of felonies that are being committed in the county because I had people who I, not as the foreman of the grand jury, but told me about them. I went back. I did a little investigating. I said, okay, I think there's enough substance here that I should bring this information before my grand jury, present it to them, and let them decide if there's enough indication that we want to investigate further or turn it over to the state attorney as a matter of a true bill and let him do the investigation and prosecute accordingly as he sees fit. Now, you got to remember, the grand jury can't arrest anybody. All they do is investigate, make determinations. If there's enough indication of illegality, we don't judge guilt or not guilt. All we do is say, hey, I smell smoke. State attorney, can you check and see if there's a fire? That's our responsibility. That's as far as we can go. Well, I called the grand jury together over the protestations of the state attorney. He relented, finally, and let me bring them in. What he didn't do was relinquish control of that grand jury at any point at the time we were meeting. Now, the meetings of the grand juries are supposed to be in secret. I asked him to remove himself once he got the grand jury in. He said, well, this is my job. I'm supposed to be here. I'm not leaving. And I've got this statute over here that says I shall be here. And I said, it shall be here during the questioning of witnesses. We have no witnesses before us today. And to be here when we need a true bill drafted. We're not drafting a true bill today because you didn't allow us time to even meet. He set the meeting for 1:30 in the afternoon on a Friday. The courthouse had to be cleared by 4:30. So we didn't have enough time to do it. Prior to the meeting, I had asked for the identities and the phone numbers of the grand jury members so that I could call them ahead of time, make sure we would have a quorum, let them know my identity and phone number because they didn't know who I was any more than I knew who they were. And he refused to let me have that. I said, I'm the foreman. It says by the statutes that I'm supposed to be doing these jobs. He said, well, don't worry about that. I've handled it. And I said, what do you mean you've handled it? He said, well, I've called all the grand jury members. And I said, you've talked to all the jury members? He said, yeah, I had to prepare them for the meeting today. Well, it struck me rather odd. I didn't understand. We're supposed to be just members of the public, go with what we know. What preparation would he possibly do? Well, after the session got going and he seated them in the petty jury box in the courtroom, and assumed his position as the state attorney by the podium, which asserted his authority over them, he let me know rather quickly that he was still in control of this grand jury. When he finally relinquished control of the jury or present, gave me an opportunity to present the information, he stood behind me and to my right. As I was speaking and started my presentation to the grand jury, I noticed they kept looking from me to him. Now, when I speak to somebody, normally they look me in the eyes and I engage them in the eyes, but their eyes kept going to him, and I couldn't understand why, when I would make a point, they would look at him. And at one point, I made a comment, I saw their eyes shift, and I turned my head, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw him. He was gesturing, making faces. He was testifying behind my back to that jury, and he was giving them cues as to how to react. At one point in the presentation, he was making that rolling motion with his hand, like, let's get this thing moving. And one of the jurors, right on cue, commented, and they pushed me to go ahead and get into the substance of the case. And I explained to them, I said, without the preparation, without the understanding of knowing the background and the base for this, I could present these facts to you, they would mean nothing. You have to have the proper context. They persisted and said, no, just tell us who killed who, and we'll make a decision, and then we can go home. So they were really rushing me through this thing, and you can't present a case like this and do it fairly. So I realized at that time that he had never given me control of the grand jury. He had never allowed the grand jury to consider or do anything independent of his control. I quickly wrapped it up. I used the excuse that we didn't have enough time, and I would have to set another meeting, which we did for 2 weeks later. Now, I was prepared to come back in there the next morning, which would have been a Saturday morning, and finish this thing up, and I could have done it in 2 to 3 hours. But it was not convenient to his schedule, so he pushed for a week away, and then they talked a little bit, and they decided 2 weeks. So,
Terry, did we run you out of gas there on your phone?
Well,
I don't know if he's out of batteries or what happened.
Yeah, the corrupt. Well, actually, I still show him as being online. I kind of feel bad because, frankly, part of the billing of this show is Bob Bernard. Bob has hardly had two words to say here except correcting the name or the pronunciation of his name. And
I guess I misunderstood. We were instructed to divide up the 2 hours, and we didn't even know.
Yeah, well, and I was an impromptu host here, so part of that fault is mine as well. And so without further ado, I would like to bring Bob Burnett in and at least get his observance on these things, as well as to talk some about the BFD group.
I'm Bob Barnett. He's Bob Bernard.
Bob Bernard. Why? Okay, never mind. I won't be.
You want to bring? This is Bob Bernard. You want to bring me in?
Yes, I want to bring you in. You are on the billing, you know.
I'm what?
You're on the billing of the show. I mean, you know, it.
Yeah, evidently, that's what I found out. I'm in the Philippines, and the connection here is not very good. The volume is low, and there's been a lot of black spots, so I've missed somewhat of the conversation.
Well, what about the BFD
group? The purpose of our group is to remove the corruption. I know that it's a separate corporation. I know the republic that has been reinstituted is what we need in mass with all the people, but I don't see that happening until the corruption is removed and the people see that and understand the corruption. And it is our intention to remove that corruption through arrest, because they're committing felonies every day under the Organic Constitution and under the UCC corporate commercial laws. Their own laws are committing felonies. And I don't care what you do, they aren't even recognizing their own laws. They're resorting to force. And that's why Thomas Nick's plan calls for arming ourselves, organizing ourselves, having an alert system so that we have the backup to their force. And I agree. They have a lot more force than we do without the military. So we have a kind of a tough road to hoe here. But in my personal opinion, the only way the republic that has been reinstituted is going to be is going to replace entirely the corporate structure is to remove, number one, remove the officers, employees, etc. of the corporate structure through arrest and detainment and trial by a court of the republic, not a court of the corporation, and by defunding the corporation. The corporation will not, I know there are four private profit corporations. The corporation cannot last without funding. I know they get a lot, they have access to a lot of funding from world powers. So somehow I was hoping, as Thomas had mentioned, that we could somehow align with our legitimate constitutional government that is now reinstituted, which is you guys and the people, and align somehow to get this accomplished.
Well, absolutely, and I think what you're going to hear, if Terry gets back on, I don't know what happened to him, but the bottom line is he has removed the state's attorney. You're telling that he's talking about.
Hey, Bob, I'm quite capable of telling my own story, if you don't mind.
Oh, I didn't know you were back.
I just got back. I'm sorry, my battery did run down. I had I stopped. I turned the car off. And I didn't realize it also turned off the charger. So anyhow, I ran down. I had to kind of scramble around and get everything going again. But anyhow, I am back, and I can continue if you're ready for me.
Terry, if you don't mind, I'd like to allow Bernard to have a moment to complete his thought, and then we'll get back to what you were talking about.
Not a problem. I'll be here.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Is there anything more?
No, that's pretty much it. Our group, VFD group, the whole purpose is to remove the corruption and restore the organic constitution. And the only way we see doing that is through removing the corruption through arrest. And for instance, as one simple example, if you've got the perfect person or the perfect authority to arrest would be the sheriff, because the sheriff has the authority, the highest authority in the states, in the county.
Yeah.
However, unless they're constitutional sheriffs, they're not going to do it. And the militia, from what I understand, has the constitutional authority of arrest. And if the military can't walk in right now because there's not enough people, then maybe they'll walk in when they see what a few number of people are doing that will, in my opinion, create a tsunami and get more people involved and hopefully the military.
on our side.
You got a real tough. You say it's simple. Yeah, it is very simple what you're saying. Just join the republic. But the hard part is getting that many people to do it.
And removing the corruption.
People have been so dumbed down, not to mention apathy and everything else. I don't see how you're going to get enough people in mass to do that. They're going to need to see some action of removing the corruption, and then they'll start waking up even more.
And
I don't mean going to war or charging the White House or anything like that. I mean legally arresting on felonies for usurping the Constitution, for presenting and representing themselves as government officials under the Constitution. That's a felony every day. That's an arrestable offense.
And yet they're not held accountable.
The militia has the authority to arrest. And that's pretty much, in summary, what I have to say.
Well, thank you, Bob. Terry, do you want to comment on that or just continue on with what you were talking about?
Let me comment on that one point, because I think he absolutely addressed the critical issue in this, and this is exactly what we believe we can do with the People's Grand Jury. Now, that's the essence of exactly what everybody has been saying, that, well, yeah, but without enforcement, you can pass all these true bills you want. Well, what is a true bill? A true bill is an indication that there's criminality occurring. And the way we're doing it right now is we're presenting this indication of criminality to law enforcement. At this point, law enforcement has completely ignored these crime reports, which is what I was charged with, was reporting a crime. I think they're very selective about who they will allow crimes to be reported against. That's what I didn't realize. I thought, well, if we tell them something's going on here, they'll look into it. And what happened, instead of having the people who we were presenting to them to be concerned about their criminality, they came back and investigated us and demanded to know what right we had to report crimes against public officials or by public officials. I'm sorry?
Would you not agree that you were actually working within a corrupt system?
Well, yes, we were. Absolutely. And the system, corrupted the grand jury process. We're talking about the statutory grand jury.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So let me bring up one other point. I have a very difficult time calling the statutory grand jury a grand jury, because there's nothing about the way they're structured or they work that has anything to do with a grand jury, because grand juries, by their basic concept under the Magna Carta, is independence. They are not controlled or directed in any way by any branch of government. Yet, the statutory grand jury is set up to be accountable to the court and controlled by the state attorney. Where's the independence? They say it's independent, but they don't allow it to operate independently. So from that end of it, now I want to go back to Bob's point. He was saying, well, you can't do anything with it. Well, we've got some very smart people from the legal standpoint, or the lawful standpoint, and from the statutory standpoint. These people understand the statutes. They understand that the statutes in almost all cases are repugnant to the Constitution and void, plus the fact that they cannot constitutionally be enforced against the people. The statutes are written intended to control government employees. But the government considers us to all be their employees, and that's how they've spread this out over the entire population. We don't
employees.
Have to stand for it. I'm sorry?
Employees or chattel?
Property. Okay. Either way, if you're an employee or your chattel, you're used to make loans or as collateral to make a loan or whatever excuse they have, they imply a contractual relationship between us and them.
Correct.
Now, that's arrogance at its best, or worst, if you want to look at it that way. So we have developed several strategies that we believe, given just a little bit of time, are going to be proving absolutely devastating, not just in the state of Florida or in our county, but over the entire country. And let me explain this. I couldn't figure out why they came at me so hard. All I did was file a report of criminality. It was a report that could have gotten buried. It could have just gone away. They could have said, all right, Terry, we're going to bring this into the system. We're going to consider it. And if we find any validity to your allegations here, as noted in the True Bill, then we will take appropriate action. That would have satisfied my need because I would have delivered the concern a member of the people, one of the people, gave to me about criminality and delivered it to the appropriate law enforcement agency. But they didn't. They came back and charged me with felonies. They have turned this into literally a federal case. They, through their ineptitude, through their panic to strike back, to defend themselves against their own criminality, have created more problems for themselves. They think they've intimidated me, but I'm not intimidated. I'm not fearful of them. So now this case is building. It's getting bigger and bigger, and they keep getting themselves in deeper and deeper. Their complicity, their involvement in the felonies that they're committing, and these are felonies that are very provable. I mean, they've refused to take any filings in the courthouse for me. They have said that I am specifically prohibited from making any filings on my case. Well, if I can't make filings on my case, how do I defend myself? If I can't get into the courthouse and I've been prohibited from going anywhere near the courthouse, how am I going to prepare my defense? They have violated their own statutes all the way through, and that's not to mention the law and my constitutional rights. So in all of this, they keep getting in deeper and deeper. Now, it may be that the criminality, the corruption, is so deep, so ingrained in every step, at every level of our judiciary, all the way to the Supreme Court, that they'll get away with it. They could whitewash it. I could spend the rest of my life in prison. Or, as people have warned me, they're just going to kill me. I'm just too much of a threat to their corruption. And that's the thing they're protecting more than anything else. So with that, that's where I am. In this whole process, and since Bob kind of swung me forward on this, and I want to deal with where we are at this reality, I will. My situation is I'm out on bond. I've not been given an arraignment date. They will not give me an arraignment date, and I was supposed to be arraigned 2 weeks after my arrest, or within 2 weeks of my arrest. So they've given me no date. They may have said it. It may have already been passed, and there's another warrant for my arrest. I don't know. And it's not going to be to their benefit to let me know. I can't prepare a case against myself. I can't do any of the filings that I've already prepared to counter the charges against me. And I'm basically being railroaded. I'm finding out there's a lot of people in this country in my same position. There are people who stood up against it. I'm sorry?
Then would you say that the common law grand jury is the solution to this particular issue? And that indictments need to be sought for the prosecutors and the other officers in the corporation that are persecuting you or
yes.
others. And so we know, I apologize for interrupting.
Not at all.
But the one thing that I've been at this for 41 years. I've been mostly researching and learning what the truth is instead of opening my mouth and looking like an ignorant fool, which I tended to do back 20 or 30, 25 years ago. So I learned to shut my mouth and start investigating and watching and seeing what these people do. And so now at the end game, at my end game, so to speak, I focus on solutions. I'm done with looking at the problem. I know what the problem is, and you've been very eloquent in pointing out the fact of the corruption in the grand jury system, and I agree with you. It's totally corrupt. But the solution is to get outside of that. Now, back in the late 80s, I had an issue with the common law movement because a number of common law the groups that I had gone to their meetings and such, I was noticing they were relying way too much on British common law when it contravened constitutional law. And I'm always driven by my oath, and the oath is primary for me. So if something goes contradictory to the Constitution, I tend to flag it as a problem. And I kind of backed away from the common law movement. So you won't know about me in that movement, per se. But I do see that a constitutional grand jury system, as enumerated in the Bill of Rights, is a crucial aspect to removing this corruption. And I would like to see those constitutional grand juries put in place with their full powers, uncorrupted by the prosecutors and by the corrupt system, and render indictments against these officers, judicial, town hall, county, all of them. See, the Republic for the United States, if it's truly, and I don't doubt your veracity, if it's truly the Republic of the United States and you are filling those offices as a constitutional function for securing our rights, then instituting these grand juries, rendering indictments, removing the offenders, and replacing them with oath keeper or with the Republic, okay, seems to me to be the most efficient method to restore the Republic. And I can't see a military solution. I know the president had mentioned this earlier. I believe he's still on. I'll actually open his mic up in case he wants to rebut or talk to me about this. But I don't have much faith in the military at this point in time. I don't believe the top-down approach is going to be effective because the bureaucracy still remains underneath to support the corruption. Until you root out the corruption, you can remove the head all you want, but it's like a hydra's head. It's just get replaced by another one. So, in other words, I see what has been happening to you. I see the value of the grand jury system, and I want to see that initiated personally. Is that the direction that you are going in? Are we going to be restoring a grand jury based on the Bill of Rights and render indictments and remove this corruption? See, I can't get away from that in my mind.
If I can interject with that, I see this as the only way to do it outside of guns and bullets, and that's the last resort. I don't want to see that. And I'll tell you a short anecdote. I spent the last evening with Colonel Riley, Harry Riley, in Crestview, Florida. I was his chief of staff in Washington during OAS. And his whole philosophy on this is OAS is going to be the last opportunity we have to restore our republic nonviolently. And that's the approach we took to it. Now, our detractors, all of them said, all we're going to do is march into Washington with a bunch of guns and start shooting, which was just so ridiculous, so far from the truth, and so totally counterintelligent. And, of course, that was not what we were about, but it scared a lot of people away from us. Well, we did our best with OAS in Washington, and I can't admit that it failed. It had one heck of an impression across the country with a lot of people. We waked up a lot of people. But when I came back home from that, I said, okay, fine. I know that now that Washington, D.C. is so far gone, they don't listen to anybody. They are so totally upside down and corrupted, there's nothing we're going to do in Washington, D.C. And that was my fourth trip to Washington. And it finally dawned on me, they're not listening. They couldn't care less about the people. And I vowed at that time, I said, all right, fine. I'm not going to fight this battle anymore in D.C. I'm going to go back home. I'm going to clean up my house. I'm going to clean up my town, and I'm going to clean up my county. I'm going to do the housekeeping at home. If I can get the people there on the right track, I can get people in other counties to do the same thing. I can get my state straightened out. I will be doing a tremendous amount toward restoring our republic. And that's what I endeavored to do. This grand jury thing fell right in my lap. I keep saying it was divine providence. God was working this somehow in there. He knew what was going to happen, and that was my calling. I did everything I could to work within the statutory system. I wanted to prove that the statutory system would work, and they proved to me there is no way. It is too corrupted. It cannot work for the people. It works for the corrupt public officers. Now, that's why we set up the People's Grand Jury. I said, all right, I have precedence. I've got legal permission to do this. I've got constitutional directive that this is my duty. I've got Supreme Court statements by Antonin Scalia and many, many others telling me exactly how to do it and stay within the law. And that's what we did. We met. We did it by prescription. We produced two true bills. I presented them to the appropriate legal authorities within the statutory government or the statutory corporation that we're dealing with here, and I was charged with a felony.
And that's where the mistake was made, and that's why I reiterate that unless we remove this corrupt overlay on the Constitution, we will never receive justice. And that's why I wrote the plan of action the way I did. And I did write in that the grand jury, but see, at that time, I was having very little faith in the grand jury because, quite frankly, you've heard the expression that the prosecutor can get a ham sandwich indicted.
Correct.
By the grand juries. And so realizing that it was so corrupted, and then having my experiences with the common law in the past, I'm just talking about my personal opinion in this regard. I was kind of wary, shall we say, of the grand jury movement. But if it's within the constraints of the Constitution and they render indictments and a warrant is issued by a court of the Republic, by a judge of the Republic, okay, then we can instruct the sheriff, backed by the militia, which I called for, and I mean by that I mean the people, the armed populace that will stand in support of the sheriff's action and remove those indicted from our office so they can be replaced with officers of the Republic, then the people we're arresting will get a better trial, a more fair trial than anybody alive today has ever received. Would you not agree with that?
Let me step in one second.
There's like 4 minutes left, and I would love it if Terry will give us the baby, because what you don't understand is that jury actually issued true bills. Can you do that, Terry?
Yeah, I'll do this real quick, and I want to argue with you a little bit, but I want to do it with love, okay? I want to present another opinion here or another view of it. We had to present this to law enforcement. It is the process. This is what we have been prescribed to do. We did that so we could determine whether or not that legal process that they insist is in place and is to preserve the peace and serve the public, we did it. to try to prove that that was the case, and they did exactly the opposite. They showed to us, they demonstrated to us that the legal process that they offer us is totally corrupted as much as the grand jury process, but it was a step we had to go through. This evidence that they're handing us on a daily basis is going to be the rope around their necks.
I agree with that. I can see that, and I agree that it was a necessary step to prove the corruption of the system and the fact that we were not going to receive any justice in it. So, yes, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that.
Thank you. Well, you know, we're going to go down this road. We're going to fight it every step of the way. We've got our systems in there. We've got our strategies in place. They have no idea what's about to hit them. And we're doing it peacefully. We're doing it within the law. May not be the statutes, but we're doing it within the law. And that's the way we intend to make this change. Now, Colonel Riley, when I met with him, and I know we're short for time, he said to me something that shocked me, because when we were in D.C., the whole time I worked with him, I want to do this peacefully. We have got to do this peacefully. We cannot resort to violence. And when I met with him yesterday, he said, Terry, it's done. The only way we can save our country is with violent revolution.
Well, I still hold out hope otherwise. My plan of action, it calls for the people to arm themselves and be ready to fight if necessary. But it uses the grand juries to render indictments or other lawful methods to render indictments, give justification for arresting these criminals from our offices. But I will not fight within the system because I have watched it for 41 years. I was a victim of it in my early years, in the early 70s. And I got to see the corruption firsthand. And so I am not as optimistic about battling them in court, because all it does to me, in my mind, is it enriches the lawyers. We're running down to the last 20 seconds, and so we have to kind of wrap this up. Mr. President, is there anything additional that you would like to say in the last seconds?
The ball is in the people's court, and that's the bottom line. The elephant in the room is the American people. And